Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The international football spotlight is shining this Wednesday evening on the Spanish city of Madrid. That's where Atletico Madrid is getting ready to host city rival Real Madrid in the decisive second leg of a UEFA Champions League semifinal. Atletico will need to launch what some are describing as a miraculous comeback to win this tie after losing the first leg last week 3-0. Portuguese star Cristiano Ronaldo, the reigning FIFA World Player of the Year, had a hat trick in that match to give defending champion Real a comfortable cushion as it bids for a record-extending 12th European title. In action Tuesday, Brazilian Dani Alves helped lead Juventus to a 2-1 win over Monaco and through to its second UEFA Champions League final in 3 years. Alves set up the Croatian Mario Mandzukic's opener in the 33rd minute, and Dani got on the score sheet himself just before halftime with a fantastic volley. French teenager Kylian Mbappe scored a consolation goal in the 69th minute for Monaco, as Juventus won the series on aggregate 4-1. With the victory, Juventus remains on course for a possible big treble in 2017. The Italian club is likely to secure an unprecedented 6th Serie A title on Sunday at Roma, while it's also in the Italian Cup final. The 2017 UEFA Champions League final will be played June 3rd in Cardiff, Wales. Meanwhile, top football officials from around the world are in Bahrain for this week's FIFA Congress. On Tuesday, the FIFA Council confirmed the breakdown of slots for the 2026 World Cup, the first World Cup that will be made up of 48 teams. Africa will get 9 automatic berths in 2026, up 4 places from its current 5. Asia will receive 8 slots. Europe will get 16 slots. The North America, Central America, and Caribbean region, known as CONCACAF, will get 6 automatic berths. Oceania will receive 1 slot, and South America will receive 6 slots. The final 2 berths will be determined via a 6-team intercontinental playoff tournament in November 2025. The United States, Canada, and Mexico have announced a joint bid to host the 2026 World Cup. While the 3 CONCACAF nations were hopeful FIFA would approve a proposal for their bid to go uncontested for the 2026 World Cup, football's world governing body says it will allow 3 months for other potential bids ahead of an August 11, 2017 deadline. At a news conference in Bahrain Wednesday, CONCACAF President Victor Montaglani had this to say.
CONCACAF is proud that we have an opportunity to potentially set the table for the rest of the confederations to be the first host of this 48-team World Cup. This joint proposal provides for additional resources needed to successfully host the expanded tournament, and we believe that our 3 countries of Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. are well established and well situated with respect to infrastructures, hotels, and all the things that are required. As we know, football is about hope and dreams. We are united behind the ideal to stage a successful World Cup create a legacy for the host nations, and bring more opportunities to the entire CONCACAF region. The initiative brings hope and dreams to these nations, but also, as I said, to CONCACAF, where we can find ways to continue to foster and champion the development of football in our region. This bid inspires the entire CONCACAF region. We had a unanimous approval of this at our Congress, and it was reinforced this morning at our Extraordinary Congress. And our group's focus is on making sure the World Cup comes back to CONCACAF in 2026.
That's CONCACAF President Victor Montaglani speaking Wednesday in Bahrain, where FIFA is holding its Congress. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It'll help us every day. It'll brighten all our ways when we keep on the sunny side of life.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest bitter part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America, they're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Wednesday night when the Boston Celtics host my magical Washington Wizards in Game 5 of their best-of-seven series. The series is tied at 2-2, and it's featured some outstanding play by the all-star point guards for the both clubs. Isaiah Thomas of the Celtics fired in a playoff-high 53 points in their 129-119 overtime victory in Game 2. John Wall of the Wizards, meanwhile, has dazzled during the playoffs, averaging nearly 29 points and 11 assists each game. The winner of the Celtics-Wizards series will play the defending NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals. In playoff action Tuesday night, the San Antonio Spurs beat the visiting Houston Rockets 110-107 in overtime to take a 3-2 lead in their series. Danny Green scored 7 of his 16 points in overtime as the Spurs overcame an injury to their all-star forward Kawhi Leonard. Leonard left the game in the third quarter after injuring his right ankle, and Kawhi then played limited minutes before sitting out the overtime period. Kawhi Leonard says he'll be ready to play in Game 6 on Thursday night in Houston, Texas. Speaking on NBA TV after the game, Basketball Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas, no relation to the Celtics guard, criticized Houston's performance in the late stages of the game and in the overtime period.
I thought Houston blew a golden opportunity to really, you know, close this series out, you know, in terms of winning this game here and being able to go back to Houston and win. Kawhi doesn't play in the overtime. I thought Houston's execution down the stretch and throughout the whole overtime period was very poor. We never got ball penetration. We never got penetration to the basket. We never got draw and kick action. Very rarely did they get into high screen and roll. We saw James Harden out there a couple of times asking for the screen. Shot clock was going down. I just thought they really lost their composure, their offensive execution down the stretch in the overtime. In San Antonio, while they didn't particularly play well offensively, what that crowd gave them was energy, and they were able to will themselves to to a win just on sheer hustle, intensity, passion, loose balls. It wasn't great offensive basketball that we saw, but what we saw was just great high-intensity playoff basketball from both teams.
Basketball Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas speaking on NBA television. Meanwhile, the NBA last week opened its first Academy Africa in Thies, outside Senegal's capital, Dakar. The elite academy will scout and develop young basketball players from across Africa. The NBA says it will also open a second Academy Africa later this year in Sali, Senegal. Among those on hand for the NBA Academy Africa launch last week was Amadou Gallo Fall, the NBA's vice president and managing director for Africa. I'm sure it was a proud moment for Amadou since he grew up in Senegal. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again as Amadou tells us how he first became interested in basketball.
I was taller than most people in my age class. I have a brother who was taller than me. He was studying in France, and he came back one summer and brought a basketball, and just I started messing with it. And everybody was suggesting that, hey, I should play basketball because I was so tall, but where I was before I moved to Dakar, I didn't have access to a court, so I only started playing later in high school, actually.
Did you play at the collegiate level?
Yes, I played in Washington, D.C., actually. That's how I got to the U.S. I met a Peace Corps volunteer who went back to D.C. and recommended to a coach that he met a young guy from Africa, from Senegal, who was 6'8". So the coach sent me scholarship letters without never seeing me play. I think it was good enough to be a 6'8". So that's how I got to D.C. I went to school there at the University of the District of Columbia, graduated in 1993.
Well, as we talk now, Amadou, you're now instrumental in the NBA in Africa. Can you talk about the league's history in Africa, especially that Basketball Without Borders program?
Yeah, so it's a long history and tradition between the NBA and the continent. And, you know, we could all date it back to 1984. I'm pretty sure there may have been some, you know, player visits before because I ran into some legends who've talked about their experiences, you know, in the early 70s, but really for us, I'm thinking 1984 when Hakeem Olajuwon got drafted first overall, and then, you know, subsequently you got Mahmoud Ball, Dikembe Mutombo, who's now our global ambassador. Those were the pioneers who really paved the way. Now we have a host of, you know, young stars from the continent, from multiple countries. I think in the early 90s, 1993 exactly, then Commissioner David Stern led a delegation, including Patrick Ewing and Alonzo Mourning, Dikembe Mutombo, and actually our colleague Kim Bahuli, who is the Senior Vice President for Basketball Operations International, for a visit to Johannesburg. And in 1994, Commissioner Stern was actually present at President Nelson Mandela's inauguration as President of South Africa. So it's a long tradition that culminated in the start of Basketball Without Borders Africa Camp in 2003. And we've been conducting that flagship basketball development program in which we partner with FIBA since 2003 and did it every year. And that eventually led to us deciding to open an office and have a physical presence on the ground because we saw tremendous potential for basketball development, and most importantly, an opportunity to really, really have an impact in African communities using our game as a conduit.
Amadou, you mentioned a couple of those pioneers from Africa, Mutombo and Olajuwon. They both honed their basketball skills at the university level here in the USA before going to the NBA. How do you see basketball development changing in Africa in the future?
In December 2016, we announced the launch of NBA Academy Africa. As part of a global network of elite training centers, the NBA is launching around the world that focus on a holistic player development approach, where young people who have the skills and the talent, the potential to grow into elite players, will have an opportunity year-round to be surrounded and put in an environment that is conducive to elite development, just like what happens in some of the most advanced countries. I think what's common about Dikembe and Hakim's story, and to a certain extent, some of us who came in the college ranks much later, we basically stumbled into the game by, I would say, pure luck. I talked to Hakim. He would say that there was a coach from the U.S. who came to his school, and then 6 months later, he's in Houston, going to the University of Houston. Dikembe went to the U.S. not on a basketball scholarship, but he was a pre-med student, had a scholarship from USAID, and hence he didn't play his freshman year at Georgetown. So just to tell you that these guys, there's so many probably other Dikembes or potential Hakim who were never discovered, but who probably were equally as talented. So now with the launch of NBA Academy Africa, we are taking a proactive role into making sure that these players from Africa are not coming into the NBA or the college ranks just by pure luck. Since we launched Basketball Without Borders in 2003, there's been 9 players from the camp who've been drafted in the NBA. Some of the names we know: Gorgui Dieng at Minnesota, Joel Embiid in Philadelphia, who was here in 2011, and Pascal Siakam being the last one drafted this last June. There's a growing number of players from Africa and the continent, but I'm really excited about the opportunity now that the NBA Africa Academy presents to not only go out and identify young elite talent from across the continent, but get them in a place where they will undergo elite, world-class type of training. So we've hired NBA coaches, NBA trainers, physiotherapists, and they will be given all the tools to really maximize their potential. So the number of players from Africa in our league is only going to continue to grow, and they will come in with better skills, they will be better prepared. And to note also that they will be going to school. So when I talk about the holistic approach, this, we are going to teach these young people the fundamentals of the game, but we parlay it with important life skills that will help them to grow to be complete human beings.
That's Amadou Gallo-Fall, the NBA's vice president and managing director for Africa. And Amadou was talking with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. Joining us once again is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
What's trending on this Wednesday?
Well, back in August 2016, Manchester United set a record for the highest football transfer fee ever. They paid nearly 90 million British pounds, which is about 105 million euros, 115 million US dollars, to transfer Paul Pogba from Juventus to Man U. Record-breaking. It's, you know, in the books now as the record. However, we're still talking about it about 8-9 months later because a new book has just come out, Football Leaks, The Dirty Business of Football, written by two German journalists. And it alleges some dirty dealings, or some questionable dealings, maybe is a better way to phrase it, with Pogba's agent and this transfer. They said Mino Raiola, who's Paul Pogba's agent, made upwards of £40 million in fees for this transfer, and he pocketed a lot of money. They're alleging some shady dealings among these trades and some of the salaries and how teams are acting. So as a result of this book coming out, FIFA is investigating this trade that happened 9 months ago. They said it's not a formal investigation, but they're looking into the documents around the trade to make sure that everything was in order. Fans are not happy about this on social media for a number of reasons. One, FIFA has always been mired in controversy and ethics concerns, so they think that this is part of that problem, so they're not thrilled that this is dredging up more of those bad feelings. They're also saying that it's distracting from FIFA's chief ethics investigator and ethics judge being removed this week. So they're saying this investigation, or this deep dive into the documents, because it's not an official investigation, is distracting from that and trying to take attention away from that. And they're also saying that FIFA is misguided. FIFA needs to investigate the World Cups in Russia and Qatar, they say. instead of going after Pogba or things that are already settled and trades that have already happened. So very interesting, not clear what their motivations are behind this. Man U says that all the paperwork was in order, so if they want to look at the documents, they can, but they're not going to find anything out of the ordinary. So we'll continue to monitor that. We'll see what happens with that, but very intriguing.
Intriguing indeed, Andrew. What else is trending out there?
Well, all this is going on as the FIFA Council is meeting in Bahrain, and I know you talked about earlier in the show with World Cup 2026, wherever that might take place, and it looks like it could be North America as their bid is being fast-tracked. Wherever World Cup 2026 is going to be, there's going to be 48 teams participating. And as you mentioned, Africa is going to have 9 direct slots, potentially 10 because of that playoff situation.
They big could have boost.
Big
that,
boost.
That would be, if they got 10 with the playoff, that'd be double what they have now.
Absolutely. So African fans in particular are thrilled about this. There's a lot of fans from a lot of different areas around the world that are thrilled. Oceania is the other one. They're getting one direct slot now, so they'll finally have a team each time. But I love this. One African fan tweeted out, he said, "Finally," and then he said, "To whom much is given, much is expected." So already, even though they got the slots and they're going to have that for 2026, he's wanting them to go far in the World Cup. It's not just getting the slots, getting to the World Cup. It's actually going far and doing well in the World Cup. But I love that line, "To whom much is given, much is expected." So I think that's the sentiment. A lot of excitement from those fans that are getting those additional slots, but they're expecting their teams to go far now that they have that opportunity.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, turning now to basketball, and specifically the National Basketball Association playoffs here in the U.S., arguably the most exciting game and exciting finish of the playoffs so far last night, according to many fans. The final seconds of overtime between San Antonio and Houston, the San Antonio Spurs guard Manu Ginobili blocks Houston's James Harden, the best beard in basketball, blocks him from behind to secure the Spurs the win and take a 3-2 series lead in the Western Conference semifinal, with the chance the winner of that series playing the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference final. It was a great block, and it came literally in the final seconds of the game. So lots of praise for Manu Ginobili, saying that with Tony Parker out, Kawhi Leonard was sidelined, Manu Ginobili really stepped up at 39 years old. And at 39 years old, playing some guys who are nearly half his age and doing quite well at it, as we saw last night. They did go back and check on social media, the keen-eyed social media fans. It was a good block, all ball, didn't hit his hand, didn't hit him anything. So it was a clean block, but an exciting one to end that game. And I love this tweet. It said, "James Harden, now that he had his shot blocked, missed that potentially game-tying shot in overtime, he's got to shave off his beard and donate it to Ginobili's bald spot after the block." I thought that was kind of funny. Kind of mean for Manu Ginobili, you know, is not as much hair on the top of his head as James Harden has on his face, but one fan having a little fun with that.
Game 6 in that series will be Thursday night in Houston, and as I mentioned, Andrew, Kawhi Leonard, he had an ankle injury in Game 5, he says he will be ready to play in Game 6 and a key player for San Antonio.
Yeah, we'll see if he makes it back. We'll see if maybe some more amazing moves from Kawhi and from Manu.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, we've talked earlier in the year about Dancing with the Stars and how there are a number of athletes appearing on Dancing with the Stars here in the U.S., and one of them is Simone Biles, the gold medal-winning American gymnast. Well, she had a gold medal performance on Dancing with the Stars this week, but wasn't smiling after getting high praise from the judges. So they asked her, they said, "Why aren't you smiling?" And her response was, "Smiling doesn't win you gold medals." The internet ate it up, Sonny. They loved it. They said it's a gold medal winning response. They said that it is the perfect response to judges telling her to smile, and they say, "We are not worthy of Simone Biles." It was just great.
She does smile after she wins gold medals.
She certainly does, but she can smile or not if she wants to. She's still an amazing champion.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the May 10th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Ethiopia, progress in fighting malaria has contributed to the remarkable reduction in overall mortality among children under five, wrote Peter Vrooman, U.S. Chargé d'Affaires in Ethiopia. In an op-ed entitled Ending Malaria for Good is a Sound Investment, Mr. Vrooman noted that global progress in the fight against malaria since 2000 has been truly historic, and the U.S. government has played a key role in this progress. The World Health Organization estimates that more than 6.8 million malaria deaths were averted worldwide between 2001 and 2015, primarily among children under 5 years of age in sub-Saharan Africa. Despite this progress, he warned, around the world a child dies every 2 minutes from malaria. More than 400,000 people will die from malaria this year, and the vast majority will be young children in sub-Saharan Africa. This region bears a disproportionate share of malaria's burden. In 2015, 90% of all malaria cases and 92% of malaria deaths occurred in the region. The U.S. government has been a leader in the fight against malaria, particularly through U.S. President's Malaria Initiative, or PMI, launched in 2005, Mr. Vrooman noted. The initiative operates in 19 countries across sub-Saharan Africa, including Ethiopia. The initiative is led by the U.S. Agency for International Development and implemented together with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Through PMI, hundreds of millions of people have benefited from protective measures and hundreds of millions more have been treated for malaria. In Ethiopia, PMI has procured about 20 million insecticide-treated bed nets, 9 million rapid diagnostic tests, and more than 15 million treatments to prevent malaria. PMI also trains healthcare workers to strengthen their capacity to fight the disease. Beyond improving child survival and maternal health, malaria control contributes substantially to eradicating extreme poverty and improving educational outcomes. Experts estimate a $60 return for every dollar investment in malaria prevention in the region. We must all join our efforts to end malaria in Ethiopia and worldwide once and for all, Mr. Vrooman concluded. Beating diseases like malaria is the right thing to do. It's also the smart thing to do.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The next, Straight Talk Africa. What does the future hold for Liberia? Who will lead the West African nation when President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf leaves office in October at the end of her second term? 2 million Liberians have registered to vote, and nearly half of those are women. What's at stake in Liberia? On the next, Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can the AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee it.